Okay. Well, hi everyone. Thank you for coming. I seriously have no idea how you managed to keep up for 11 hours straight, but I'm really impressed. I've never been at a conference that started at 7:45 in the morning and went all the way to 7 p.m. So really, it's very impressive. Thankfully, the sessions are recorded, so if you doze off, you can always watch the recording later. What I'm going to do is talk to you about mobile services and building a mobile application with a .NET backend using mobile services. These are brand new features that were just announced a couple of weeks ago at the Build event in San Francisco. And so there are still some rough edges here and there. It's all in preview, but the underlying technology, mobile services, has been around for about a year and a half. And so I'm going to start by describing the general features, platforms, what is supported, and then we're going to dive in and build our applications for today. First, I just want to make sure, has anyone here been to my talk this morning? Okay, just you, that's good, and you as well. So yeah, I'm gonna repeat again what mobile services are all about. So for you two, the first 10 minutes are probably going to be pretty similar. How many of you are mobile application developers? Thinking about getting into mobile development, right? And has anyone built a Windows Store application? Has anyone seen how to build a Windows Store application? Wonderful. So, because that's essentially what we're going to be doing. Okay, let me first tell you why we're here and what we want from mobile services. Again, this is a slide you guys will recognize. We are app developers, and one thing as app developers that we really don't like to focus on, at least at the initial stages of development, is the backend. We want to build the UI. We want to make sure we have the best user experience for our users. We might target multiple platforms. So we might have a single person working on iOS, Android, Windows Phone, Windows 8. We might have a few teams working on the mobile applications. We really don't have time to spend when building the first minimal viable product. We don't have time to spend on the backend. And for getting started, I mean, it does take quite some effort. You have to bring up your servers, databases, link them together. For authentication, you have to store user information somewhere, or you have to integrate with existing auth providers. For push notifications, there's a bunch of infrastructure that you have to build to deliver push notifications to your mobile users. So there's a bunch of work on the back end, which really slows us down as app developers. And so there's a number of platforms, and Microsoft, with its mobile services, is one of them, that help you build a back end, which give you a back end for your mobile applications that has a free tier, so you can get started for free. You can build an app that will run on several hundred devices for completely free. They give you a free database as well, so you can store data in it, and I'll describe the various features in a couple of slides. It works on all the major mobile platforms. It has support for iOS, for Android, for Windows Phone, for Windows 8, for PhoneGap, for Xamarin, a bunch of platforms, really. So you don't have to be locked into Microsoft technology. And just this morning, I was talking about building iOS and Android applications with mobile services. And again, that's sort of crazy that Microsoft are so open towards building apps on other platforms, as long as you, of course, use Windows Azure. And finally, we have Cloud Scale. And again, if you're deploying your own servers as the backend of your mobile applications, it might work when you have a couple of servers and several hundred users, thousands of users, tens of thousands of users. But if you're really successful, you probably are going to need your own data center, or you're going to need a cloud. And so mobile services from the onset give you something that will be able to scale as your application grows, as you have more users, more data, more push notification, as your needs will grow. And so in this talk, I'm going to focus on the .NET backend for mobile services, which basically is a .NET app that runs on a server hosted by Microsoft, which is the backend for your mobile application. This was just announced a couple of weeks ago at Build. The previous version of mobile services had a JavaScript backend based on Node.js. But I guess for C#, for .NET, for Microsoft developers, the .NET backend is going to be something you feel much more comfortable with. It's based on ASP.NET Web API. So if you're already familiar with Web API or even ASP.NET MVC, it's all going to be a breeze to you. And so this backend is really more suitable for talks like this to a .NET-oriented audience. The Node.js backend with the iOS and Android apps, again, what was discussed this morning, there's a recording that's going to be available, which you can look at. So in this talk, the .NET backend and C# clients, C# all the way through. So let's talk a little bit about the various supported platforms and the features that this backend can offer your mobile apps. So in terms of platforms, I've already mentioned this. There's a bunch of them supported. There are client libraries for all of these platforms. Windows Phone, Windows 8 is what we'll focus on today. But there's also support for Xamarin, which is a C# platform for building C# applications that run on iOS and Android. There is native support for iOS and Android, so there are libraries provided by Microsoft that you can integrate into your iOS and Android applications, and they will talk to mobile services. There's a library for JavaScript, which is basically a big JavaScript file, so you can work with mobile services from a standard website or from a mobile website. Or, using the PhoneGap support, you can also use PhoneGap, which is an HTML and JavaScript mobile development platform, which is packaged as an application. So there's virtually support for every mobile platform out there, and as you can see, it's not really limited to mobile. It also is very applicable to a website, a standard website that's viewed even on a desktop, and it's all based on HTTP. So you could also integrate this into your WPF application, into your C++ application, if that's really sort of your thing. In terms of features, what you get from that backend right out of the box. So mobile apps have data. You have to store your data somewhere. A cloud is an obvious option for storing your data. So mobile services has support for data and for smart queries on top of that data, which are built on OData, which hopefully you've already heard about. OData is very well integrated with Web API, and so the .NET backend builds on that support. Your client sends in an OData query. The server executes that query, brings the results back to the client. The query runs on the server. You only get the results that you're interested in. There's also obvious support for inserting stuff, deleting stuff from tables, all the standard CRUD operations on database tables. And the database which mobile services will use can be, and it is by default, SQL Server, hosted in Windows Azure, but there are also replaceable backends that you can switch out and bring in for MongoDB and for Azure Table Storage, which are cheaper NoSQL options, which might be reasonable for you to use. Again, the default is SQL Database, SQL Azure, and it uses, the free tier uses a free database, a free 20 megabytes database that you get for free with a Windows Azure subscription. So you, again, can get started with the SQL Azure option if you'd like. But again, there's also Azure Storage, Azure Table Storage, and Mongo support. The other thing mobile app need is push notifications. And the .NET backend has support for sending push notifications to users on all the supported platforms. So you can send pushes to Apple devices, you can send pushes to Windows Phone devices, you can send pushes to Android devices. And you have to write a little bit of platform-specific code for that, because each platform uses a slightly different push notification format. Like on Windows 8, there's a bunch of different push notifications you can deliver. There's toasts, and there's tiles, and raw notifications, a bunch of different options. On iOS, on the other hand, you only have this one type of push notification that shows up as a banner, and there's only room for a simple message. So again, the backend abstracts this away from you. It gives you a set of simple classes that you can use to deliver push notifications to your users. One at a time, all the users at once, sliced by some interesting criteria like location. It's all up to you, of course, but there is support for sending push notifications. The third thing is authentication. You can authenticate your users through the .NET backend using four major OAuth providers, which are Twitter, Facebook, Google account, and Microsoft account. There's built-in support for all of these four. You have to, of course, again, register with these services. For Facebook, for instance, you have to create a Facebook application. For Twitter, you have to create a Twitter application. But after you do that and you tell mobile services about your registration, your users will then be able to log in to your application through these providers. So you don't have to store usernames and passwords. But if you really want to store usernames and passwords, you can also do that, because there's also support for Windows Azure Active Directory. So you could have your own usernames and passwords stored safely in the cloud, and your users will authenticate to your service through that Active Directory. So again, authentication is a pretty important concern, which is handled by the backend. You don't have to talk to the OAuth providers yourself. You don't have to implement the whole OAuth flow with the callback URLs. It's all handled for you by the backend. The fourth thing is customization of the data access layer. Again, in the .NET backend, it's all just built on top of ASP.NET Web API, so it's not really surprising that you can totally customize what happens when a user accesses data. For example, you can perform validation, you can reject certain input, you can only return records for which the user has authorization, you could insert additional data, modify the things that the user is providing, change data in the database. So again, you have full control over exactly what goes into the database, but if you don't want that control, you get reasonable defaults out of the box. So if your user just wants to store some data in a table, later retrieve that data from the table, it only takes a few lines of code. There's support for custom APIs. Again, it's all built on top of ASP.NET Web APIs, so you can write additional, not out-of-the-box API controllers, which expose arbitrary HTTP endpoints. Again, it's all hosted on Azure. You can scale this thing. It can access your database. It can access other web services. So the operations you do on your backend don't have to be coupled to a database. You can just expose arbitrary HTTP endpoints. We have support for offline synchronization, which is a major feature that I want to show you. It's been kept totally secret until build. It's only been, again, announced a couple of weeks ago. If you notice, the agenda for this session says there's a secret feature which will be announced at build. This is the secret feature. Offline synchronization means that your users can work offline. And there's support for pushing and pulling changes from the service whenever you want to. And there's also support for conflict management. So the server can detect that there is a conflict, tell you about it. You can decide what to do with the conflict, like merge the results or discard the local data and so on. This offline sync support is currently in preview. And it's only available to Windows Store applications. But I'll show you the library. It's in pretty decent shape right now. And there's certainly more to come. And I'm pretty sure it's going to be supported on the other platforms as well. It uses SQLite as the backing store. We have mass push notification support, which is something I'll demo briefly. And it uses a feature of Windows Azure called Windows Azure Notification Hubs. Notification hubs are a platform for sending millions of push notifications to your users. As long as you have only a few hundred users, sending a push one by one to each user is something that's going to take a few seconds. If you have millions of users and there's maybe some interesting sports event and you want to send scores to all your users at once, it's going to take weeks to deliver millions of push notifications. So notification hubs integrated with mobile services give you support for delivering millions of push notifications in a scalable way. And again, that's something we're going to look at briefly, and I have a talk tomorrow morning on notification hubs specifically. And finally, a couple of nice features which are only available in the .NET backend, and they're a really good reason to use that backend for us .NET developers who use Visual Studio every day. There's support for remote debugging your mobile service while it's running in the cloud. So you can just attach Visual Studio, you can step through your code, you can see what happens exactly when a user hits your application. And there's support for local deployment. So while developing your mobile service, you don't have to push it to Windows Azure already. You can start by testing the app locally, because again, it's just a web API project. So if you can deploy it to IIS Express, run, test locally, and then publish your changes to the Microsoft Cloud. So it's a really cool, impressive, nice set of features. And let's get started by looking at a system diagram that sort of shows how these things tie in together. So on the left, we have the various clients. Again, there's a bunch of different platforms, phones, tablets, desktop devices, websites. In the Microsoft Cloud, what we're going to do today is use a SQL database, SQL Server database, hosted in Microsoft Azure. And we're going to use the ASP.NET Web API backend, which talks to that database. It can expose additional custom APIs. It can only expose the tables behind it. But that's the part provided by Microsoft. And then we have two integration points, one with push providers, like the Windows Notification Service, which sends push notifications to Windows devices, or the Microsoft Push Notification Service, which sends push notifications to Windows phone devices. And the other integration point is the auth providers. For Facebook, for example, you have a service hosted by Facebook, which your user authenticates with, and then that service calls back into your backend and tells it here's a user login, and then that user identity can flow through the whole system with every request performed by that user. So this is the general scheme of things. Now, before we get started, I want to show you the portal experience when you create your first mobile service. So this is the Windows Azure, the Microsoft Azure portal. This is probably the highest zoom level I can get to without breaking the page. So I'm going to click New, Mobile Service, Create. Then it asks me a couple of things. Let's call this thing todolistnl.net. Right, invalid fields. I'm going to use an existing SQL database. Now, I'm going to create a free 20 megs SQL database in the North Europe region. And I want to use the preview.net backend. Right. Stepping over. What does it want? A free database already exists. Okay, so I'm going to use an existing database. Right, and here it is. I just have to recall my password. And now the mobile service is being provisioned. As you can see here, it says creating the mobile service. As soon as it's done, essentially nothing is yet hosted in the cloud, but what we will be able to do is download a ready-made Visual Studio project with both the service, which we can run locally, and the client of our choosing. Now, there is an existing service which will be the bulk of my demos, and this is also what I'll post online after this talk because it has a bunch of features I won't be able to code live in front of you. And, well, here it is already created, so I'm just going to use this one. But here we have more features that I'll show you later. So if I click this one that I've just created, I get this nice dashboard which says your mobile service was created. Now let's connect it to an app. And then it asks me for one of the supported platforms, Windows Phone, Windows Store, iOS, Android. I want to do C# all the way, so I'm going to pick Windows Store. And then I'm going to say create a new Windows Store app. And so there's a bunch of simple steps here. First, install Visual Studio. This is probably the step that's going to take longest, but we already have Visual Studio. And then it says download and run your app and service locally. Which language do you prefer, C# or JavaScript? C#. Build a solution and press F5, and that's it. So let's download this. It's offering me to open or save. I'm going to do open. Right. I'm going to extract this thing to C/temp. Okay, and there it is, a Visual Studio solution. I'm going to open it. In this Visual Studio, I have lying around just for that. Yeah, I trust this source. And coming up is our solution. Thank you, Visual Studio. There we go. So what we have here is a Windows 8.1 Windows Store application project. You can recognize the various XAML files. And a standard ASP.NET web API project, todolistnl.net service, with, again, the typical web API stuff, like a controllers folder. Now, I'm just going to take them for their word and run this thing as is, without making any code changes. So first, I'm going to set this as my startup project and do start without debugging. And now, of course, it's not going to use that SQL database in the cloud. It's going to use a local SQL instance in a file. What's it called? SQL embedded? I don't remember. But anyway, it's going to use a local database. And the Windows Store app will be able to connect to that service running locally and to that database. So for now, we're just compiling. And we have successfully compiled. And now it's launching a sort of a welcome page in the browser. You can also see the IIS Express tray button over there. This mobile service is up and running. Try it out. I'm going to click try it out. And I'm taking to a nice help page, which has all the various APIs which my web, which my mobile service currently supports. This is not something you'll see in the cloud deployment, obviously, for security reasons. But locally, it's really helpful. And you can actually issue operations from this nice help page. For example, you can see something about to-do items. I have a bunch of different HTTP verbs that I can invoke. So what if I say get tables slash to-do item? I just click that, or I think I click that, and I'm taken to this nice page. The CSS took a while to load. So it issued a get request, and it returned some sample information, and I can customize that with headers, body, and so on, send the request, and see an actual live response in a couple of seconds. There it is. So I've got the response headers over here and the body of that response. And so you can see that magically in my local database, there have appeared two to-do items with IDs, a complete property, and a text property. These were generated by the service project. And I can also try to maybe do an insert from here. Going back to the previous page, maybe I can do a post. And so I'm going to try this out. It even gives me a template for what I should provide. So I'm going to say text complete this demo, complete false, and I'm going to skip the rest of these. They will be auto-generated by the service. And I can hit send, and it goes ahead and says 201 created. And if I go back to the get verb and try that out, then we now have three to-do items. So I haven't even shown you the Windows Store application yet, but we already have so much to play with if we like HTTP, right? We can issue HTTP requests to the various things supported by the service. But let's run the Windows Store application. Here's the Windows Store application. I'm going to set this as my startup project, and I'm going to start without debugging. Again, the build process is a bit slow. It's not mobile services' fault. It's probably the Roslyn preview, which I've just installed yesterday. Right, compiling, registering, deploying, and here it is. So what I have here on the right are the actual items in my table, and I can even complete them. When I check this checkbox, it goes ahead and updates the table to say, well, this item was completed. And on the left, I have another piece of UI to insert new to-do items. So complete this demo as well. And I can hit save. And it goes ahead and appears here on the right. And I think you'll trust me at this point that it's really syncing to a database. And I can hit it with the browser again to see the results. So if I just open the browser again and I do this get one more time, then we have four to-do items now, one of which is complete, the second one, which I've checked. So this is what it looks like running locally. And of course, while it's running locally in Visual Studio, you can set breakpoints and debug your whole way through from the client app to the server. But I mean, at some point, you're going to want to deploy this to Windows Azure. So here's how you do it. You click the mobile service project, and you do a publish. This is one of the benefits of using Visual Studio. It's all there. My publish target is Windows Azure Mobile Services, and it's not recognizing my subscription. I gotta do an import. What am I importing? If I go back to the portal, here's the third step. When prompted, download your publish profile from here. So this is what it needs to deploy. I'm gonna click this. I'm gonna save as in C/temp, and then back in Visual Studio, I'm going to import that from C/temp. There we go. And this provides all the necessary information for me now to publish. If you're really sharp eye, you'll notice it uses web deploy, which is pretty standard for ASP.NET applications. You can also deploy using other methods, but this is the most reasonable one. And I can just trust all the defaults and click publish. Now, in my output window, I have this nice web publish activity status, which shows me sort of what's going on right now. I can see the details if I'd like. And that's it. It's been deployed. The URL I've got in my browser right now is already a live web one, todolistnl.net, azuremobile.net. However, it does look like the one we ran locally, but the try it out operations will not work. I mean, again, for security reasons. But this is sort of a landing page so that you know the publish was successful. And at this point, our client app, the Windows Store app, does not really use the hosted mobile service. So I'm just going to make one simple change in that Windows 8.1 app. There's this AppXAML.cs, and inside AppXAML.cs, you'll notice there are two things that look suspiciously like connection strings. It's basically just two pieces of information, one of which is the URL where the service is hosted, and the other is an application key. And so right now, it's configured with the settings here on top, which work locally, so I'm just going to comment that out and uncomment this in, compile, and just run this thing again. And so right now, we're working with the cloud-hosted service, and this is why this thing took a little longer to refresh, and you see it's a clean slate. And so I can say from live app to cloud, save. Oh, man. From live app to cloud, click save. And again, it does show up, and I can mark something as complete. But this time, it's going to be a little harder for me to actually see these changes in my database. So again, Visual Studio to the rescue. If I just open Server Explorer right here on the left, and this is part of Visual Studio, of the Windows Azure SDK for Visual Studio. And there's a couple of things here that only have been added in Visual Studio 2013 Update 2 Release Candidate. So you will need that for a couple of things that I'll show you. But the basic idea here is that I can navigate through the stuff I have in Windows Azure, which does require me maybe to... Hold on. Let's refresh this thing. Nope, that's fine. Should show up here under SQL databases. There should be multiple ones. Well, maybe that part isn't working so well. Actually, I have this over here. If I refresh this. Is this the local one, or is this the server one? We'll find out soon enough. Here's the to-do items table in SQL Server. What if I say show table data? Incorrect syntax near the keyword from. Are you kidding me? Oh, yeah, well, that's the local DB. That's the local DB, and it's now good. So Windows Azure is sort of setting me up for this demo. Okay, well, let's do it from the portal. I really want to show you this experience before we write a single line of code, because that's sort of the provisioning story. So if I go back to the portal, click on SQL databases, I've got my two databases, and we're using the first one, Sasha FreeDB. If I click this one, then down here I have a Manage button. Click Manage. It says the current IP address is not included in the existing firewall rules. So I really can't connect to an arbitrary SQL instance in the cloud from any IP on the internet. But it also says, do you want to update the firewall rules? Sure. So at this point, it has added the firewall rule. And I'm going to have to allow pop-ups for that. And what it's opening right now, oh no, it's just refreshing. But then... as soon as I click Manage again, it's going to open a sort of a minimal browser-hosted SQL Management Studio. Oh, man. Always allow. Yeah, it's going to open a simple cloud-hosted browser management studio where we can see our tables. So, yeah, Manage for the third time. Here's the pop-up it really wanted to display. And this is embarrassingly, this is still a Silverlight app. Anyway, my username is Sasha, and my password is right here. And we click Login. And so we are now connected to that SQL database in Windows Azure. And you can see that, 20 megs is not really a lot. somewhere down here, there's design. And then I have my various tables. And specifically, the one we've been using is this one, to-do items, under the to-do-list-nl.net schema. So there's a separate schema for each service. And once I have that, I can say open. No. Once I have that, I can how do I browse this thing? This wasn't planned, so I don't remember how to actually browse the table. Now, edit it does show me the data. Edit is for changing the actual table, but there's also a data link. There we are, okay? So at this point, we can see with our own eyes the data that we've inserted from the Windows Store application running locally, and it's now in the cloud in a SQL database, which is exposed to us through a web API mobile service. So this is all fun and games, but it's really time to get to some code and see how we can customize this solution, how we can perform authentications and push notifications, all the various things I've been promising you to see. But as you can see, the getting started experience is mostly about downloading some files, and then you can just run this from Visual Studio, and you can publish your mobile service to Windows Azure just, you know, to get started. So the first thing I want to talk to you about is doing actual queries on our data. So again, we're doing C#, and the most reasonable way to express a database query would be using Link, Language Integrated Query, in C#. So here's how we do it. We have this mobile service client object, which we have already seen in AppXAML.cs, which is initialized with our mobile service URL and application key, which was already populated for us. And then I can ask it for a table reference. And for that, I need a specific strongly typed class. So this class also was generated for us, and in our case, it's called to-do-item. In the app I'm going to show you later, it's an apartment object. And then once we have the table, I can do stuff like table.where, which is a link query already. And for example, I can say, I want apartments where the rented property is equals to false. To-list async returns an awaitable thing. I can await that and get back a list. So I can do link queries on a table, which is actually sitting in a SQL database in the cloud. And again, I can do anything that's supported by OData, which isn't the whole of link, but it's a lot. I can do order by. I can materialize the whole thing and then do grouping if I'd like. So there's a bunch of things you can issue your queries with through this link syntax. If you want to execute plain, straight SQL statements on your database, you can write a custom API for that. But, I mean, for simple operations on a single table, this thing is really enough. So this is how you do a data query in your application. The slide is not advancing. Two slides. I just want to give you another brief example of authentication support. Suppose we want to authenticate our users using Facebook. So in the portal, there is a section for Facebook settings where you provide a couple of values issued to your application by Facebook. We're going to do this with Twitter in a couple of minutes. And then in your app, you simply say service.loginasync mobile authentication provider.facebook. And that opens up the whole OAuth flow. It will redirect the user to a Facebook page. The user will log in using their Facebook credentials. It will call back to your mobile service. The mobile service will issue a token, and that token will be passed back into your application so you know the user has successfully logged in. And from that moment on, every operation that user performs will carry that identity information with it. So this is a single liner that gives you authentication support. And finally, another something that we'll be doing in the demo is sending push notifications. And for push notifications, there are two major interesting components. One is client-side registration. The client has to express their interest in subscribing to push notifications. In Windows Store apps and in Windows Phone apps, it's really a couple of lines. So first, you have this really handy API, push notification channel manager, create push notification channel for application async. Yeah, which gives you a push channel object. This you can do from any Windows Store app. And then, again, with your mobile service object, which you have on the cloud, on the client, you have get push register native async, and you pass in the URI from that channel. And this takes care of all the registration for you. Now, again, if you've been at my talk this morning, you'll know that with the JavaScript backend, it's a lot more complicated, and you have to keep track of the channels yourself. With the .NET backend, this is really all you have to do. The fact that this device is now registered for push notifications is being taken care of, so to speak. It's being taken care of by notification hubs, which I've mentioned as a way for sending scalable pushes. But what it means for you is that on the client side, you only need this, and your server doesn't have to explicitly handle these registration requests. Once the client has done this, you can now send push notifications from the server. And to send the push notification from the server, here's an example of how you can do it. You basically, again, use simple .NET API. This example here is an Apple push message because it's actually a bit shorter. There's less opportunity for customization. You basically create an object, Apple push message. You provide the message that you want to push to the clients, and then you call push send async. So again, on the server side, it's also fairly easy to send the push notification out. Again, I'm going to be showing you all of these things in a demo in a couple of minutes, but I just wanted to give you sort of a brief overview of what it is all about. So let's take a look at the other application which I promised to show you, which is the rent-a-home application. Again, this is essentially based on what I've downloaded from the Azure portal when I created this service. I have a Windows Store 8.1 app, and I have the service itself. I've also added an additional console application, which isn't relevant for us today. And I've already deployed this service to Windows Azure. So first, I'm just going to give you a quick look at what it looks like on the client side. So this is the rent-a-home application. On the left is going to be a list of apartments that are available for rent. Takes a couple of seconds to warm up and load that data. So here are the two apartments we currently have available, and we can rent and delete them. And here on the right, I can add a new apartment. So let's try that. Let's say we want an apartment at the World Forum. Let's say 8 bedrooms. Add. The server says, error adding apartment. The request could not be completed. Unauthorized. Indeed, anonymous users cannot add new apartment listings in my application, so we're going to have to log in first. And there's a handy login button down here. And this is what the authentication flow looks like on the client for the Twitter OAuth provider. Basically asks me for my Twitter username and password. And it says this is the rentahome.net application, so I can know what I'm authenticating to. And so I have a fake account called John McUser, which we'll use. Sign in. It says, do you want to remember my sign-in info? And I'm going to say no, because it's part of the demo. Okay, so now we are logged in. And there's even a ugly text box over there that says, yeah, we are now logged in. And so now let's try to add an 8-bedroom apartment. I click Add. And sure enough, here it is. And it also should show up on the map. You can see here, I'm not going to zoom in all the way, but you can see here the apartment, and a few seconds later, admittedly, you can also see a push notification that a new apartment was added. So this demo app really integrates all of the various parts that I've been talking about. There's authentication support, there's push notifications, and it's really interesting to take a look at the code for this thing. I just want to do another thing. I want to try and delete an apartment. So there we are. We've deleted an apartment, and I can rent an apartment, which also removes it from the list because it's rented already. No need to show it to additional users. Right. So let's take a look at the code for this rentahome.net app. The server side, of course. So here's the structure generated by the template, to which I've added a couple of things. First of all, the data object, apartment.cs, as you can see, is simply a C# class derived from entity data, which has the various properties I want to store for each apartment that I offer for rent. So there's a user ID, which is the owner. There's an address, geographical coordinates, number of bedrooms, and a Boolean that says whether or not it's rented out. Then we also have a database context, rent-a-home context CS, which derives from Entity Framework's DB context. When you use SQL Server, you can also use Entity Framework for all your data access needs. This isn't a particularly interesting class, just mentioning it for completeness. And the interesting part here is really the controller, Apartment Controller, which is a web API controller with some customizations. It inherits from, instead of just a plain API controller or something, it inherits from Table Controller of Apartment, which again is provided by the .NET Mobile Services framework. But it is a web API controller. So it has a bunch of methods, and each method corresponds to a particular HTTP verb and route. For example, we have here this particular method called getApartment, which takes a string with the apartment ID and returns single result of apartment. And so this will be called when something like this is issued to our mobile service, an HTTP GET request to this URL. And so as you can see here, there's not much code to write because the base class takes care of all the nitty-gritty details. A slightly more complex example is the insert operation over here. So this method is called postApartment, and it takes an apartment object which was provided by the user. And you'll notice there's an attribute on top which says authorize level, authorization level user. And what this means is that only authenticated users can insert new apartments. And this is the reason we had that exception message popping up before I logged in when I tried to insert a new apartment. So really this is all it takes to say the user has to log in first. And then inside this post apartment method, I can be 100% sure that there is some user identity that's been flowing in. And so I can do this. I can just say the user ID for that apartment, which I'm going to store in the database shortly, is the user ID which is simply flowing through that HTTP request. And so this user property, again, is part of the web API support, and I can cast it to service user, which is a mobile services concept, which has an ID property, which is the user ID. Another thing I do here, which shows you that you really can customize the whole process, is geocode the address and translate it to physical geographical coordinates. So here I'm using a NuGet package which I found online, which has support for, which has strongly typed classes around Bing Maps and Google Maps and a bunch of other geocoding providers. And it basically has a method called geocode async, which takes the address provided by the user, which is a string, and returns something that has coordinates, a latitude and longitude, which I simply embed inside that apartment before inserting it. So I can enrich the data provided by my clients. The client provides an apartment object with only an address. I add the coordinates on the backend. And then finally, after all this enrichment process, we finally insert that apartment into the table. And that insert, again, is performed by the base class. I do have some customizations around this, but I mean, except for that, insert async is a method on table controller which inserts the apartment to the database. And then another thing we've seen that I'm sending a push notification. So again, to send a Windows push notification, I create this Windows push message class, and then I initialize an XML payload. This is sort of ugly, and hopefully there will be some nicer thing that wraps this in the future. But for now, providing this XML is probably the simplest way to go. Of course, all of these XMLs are documented very well online, so you just copy that XML and embed it into your app. You'll notice that there's three different pieces of text. One is static, and the other two are dynamic and generated by me so that the user sees exactly what apartment was added. And then to send the push notifications, I use services.push, which is again provided by the base class. Send async sends that push notification. And that's pretty much for insert. So this is how we insert a new apartment. And there's a couple of customizations here. We have the geocoding, we have a push notification coming out, and we also have the first couple of lines which assign an owner to the apartment that's going to be inserted. I don't trust the client with this, but I do have an identity flowing through, which I can see on the server, determine what user it is, and then store that information in the apartment object. Another example is the delete apartment route. So here we have delete apartment, which takes an ID. Now, first of all, of course, only authenticated users can invoke that API. If the user is not authenticated, they can't delete anything. If they are authenticated, then I want to verify that the apartment we're about to delete is one that we have created, right? Doesn't make sense for me to allow other users to delete my apartments. And so here's how. We use this lookup thing, which you've already seen when doing gets, which retrieves an apartment with that ID from the database. And then I simply verify that the user ID that has currently been provided is equal to the user ID who is the owner of that apartment. If there's a match, again, I simply defer to a method on the base class called deleteAsync. If there isn't a match, then I throw an HTTP response exception with a status code forbidden, which is a 403 that the client's going to see and throw an exception on the client side. So this is just, briefly, the amount of customizations that you get for the table access stuff. Whenever a user on the client side performs reads, updates, deletes, inserts on a table, on this table abstraction, your web API controller gets invoked. If you only want the basics, which is reading from a table, writing to a table, deleting from a table, there's zero code you have to write because this whole thing was provided by the template. And if you need customization, then you go ahead and edit the specific methods that you need. And you can also remove stuff you don't need. For example, if there is no support for deleting apartments in my application, then I can simply delete this delete apartment method, and then there simply will be no way of deleting something from the client. So that's a table controller. Again, this apartment controller class inherits from table controller, which is how we wrap operations on top of a SQL Server table. But I also have another example here of an add controller. And this thing is a more classic web API controller. API controller is plain vanilla ASP.NET web API, no customizations whatsoever. And so this is how you expose a custom API, which doesn't have anything to do with tables. Essentially, this is a class that exposes HTTP endpoints. And it gets, through dependency injection, the same services object, which can be used to send push notifications, to authenticate the users, and various services like that. It's sort of a convention-based thing. If you declare a property called services of type API services with the public getter and setter, then the framework will do dependency injection and plug in whatever is necessary. And then I have a single method called postAdd, which is an HTTP post. And so when this is called, again, this is an HTTP post endpoint, when this is called by a client, by a web service, by a third party, which I give access to my mobile service, then what I do is create a push message and again deliver it to all my users. And this time the idea is that I'm sending an advertisement to all my registered users. So the way this would work is that, for instance, I'd have an ad portal, a very primitive ad portal, which I've just worked on here. And currently it's a local application. And it looks like this. There's simply a... It's simply a web page with a send ad section. And so I can say here, you should rate this session and click send. And you'll see that a push notification was delivered to the one subscriber that we have right now, which is me. So I can expose custom API endpoints, which can be accessed without the mobile services framework. Again, it's just HTTP. So this particular web page is simply using AJAX to access that HTTP endpoint and send an ad to all my registered users. All right, so with that, we have the plain table controller, which wraps a table, and we have this ad controller, which is a custom API. We've seen how to send push notifications and how to authenticate users, and so there's just one thing which I've promised you and we haven't seen yet, which is offline sync. And again, it's really, really cool, and it's very easy to integrate with our app without making a single change on the server. So the whole backend we have seen, it's going to stay exactly as is. I just want to make changes to the client so that I can work offline when an internet connection is not available. So this thing is currently in preview. It's in super preview, like an alpha or something, and it's only available for Windows Store applications right now, so this is why this demo is using Windows Store. And it uses SQLite as a default backing store. So whatever you store offline, the stuff that you cache offline when you're not connected to the internet, that is stored in a SQLite database, which is a single file, essentially. And there's a SQLite package for Windows Store applications that you'll have to install for this to work. The push and pull operations, and this is important, are manual. So there is no magic automatic synchronization. You have functions that you have to call whenever you want to pull data from the server or push your changes back to the server. So you work offline, you accumulate a bunch of changes, and then you push them to the server, and you pull new stuff from the server back to your offline store. It might change in the future, but I think this is the shape this API will have to make it explicit when you are actually syncing and to provide the user with a chance to merge any conflicts, to handle conflicts which might occur. And yeah, there is good conflict detection in this story. So let's take a look at the demo first. If I switch back to my app, there is this toggle here, offline sync, and I'm going to set this to on. And then I'm going to do a pull. So now I have essentially the current state of my server data. I'm not sure why the Redmond apartment showed up again, but never mind this. So we've done a pull. Now we can make changes. Like, for example, I could say I want to delete this apartment. If we go back to the SQL database and refresh this. Ah, it's the wrong database. Sorry. Design, apartments, edit, data. Okay, so this is the one, right? This is the one I've deleted? Yeah, that's the one I've deleted offline, and it hasn't been deleted yet from the SQL server table, right? It's still totally there. And then I'm going to try and push my changes. And then we're going to take a look at that portal again. There has to be a refresh somewhere. Oh, there it is. Refresh. And it's gone. So this is manual explicit push and pull. Now, I have buttons for this in my UI, push and pull. You might not want the user to be aware that you have offline support, so you might call pull whenever you open the app or something, and you might call push when you detect that the internet connection was restored. But you can definitely make this accessible to the user as well, give them explicit buttons like I've done. I'm going to show you the code shortly, but first, let's take a look at a conflict. We have this... right, so let's pull again. Let's add an apartment. Let's add the same one, for that matter. So here it is, and I'm going to push. New apartment added, and I'm going to pull. There it is. It's a bit misleading, but that's my fault. It's the code that I have in there. It's right here in the database. And now I'm going to make a little change. I'm going to find that rented property and set it to true. And let's refresh to my... Oh, no, sorry. First, save. Error. Cannot have any enabled triggers if the statement contains an output clause without into clause. This is definitely interesting. Let's see if I can do this from Visual Studio. Because it did work when I did it from Visual Studio. Doesn't recognize my database. This sucks. Let's try to do this through a query. Update. Update. rentahome.net.apartments set rented equals 1. So I'm going to do this for all the apartments, but it doesn't really matter. Let's take a look at the data again. Right, so now it's rented. So I've forced the conflict by changing the data in the database. You could imagine there was another client which rented this apartment and so on. But if I go back to the app and click rent, well, nothing happens, no conflict yet, but then I push. And when I push, I get this handy message, which I built. It's not out of the box, but it's really easy to build, and you'll see how, which says synchronization conflict was detected. The local version is this. The server version is this. Now, you'll notice that the user ID, the address, the latitude, the longitude are all the same. So how does it even detect the conflict? How could it possibly tell that the server version is different from the local version? By what? Well, do you see a timestamp? Well, yeah, there is a timestamp right here, which created at, updated at, but the local version doesn't have that at all, so... But there's another thing here, another property, version, right? There's a version property. Here's the local version, ends with CBM equals. Here's the server version, ends with CBG equals. So it's not the same version. And the reason we even have that version is that the table, the database has a trigger for every update, which increments that version. So this is how the server detects the conflict. And then I can say keep local version, keep server version, or abort. Suppose I say keep local version. Well, we won't be really able to see this because it's really the same update. It's just going to change to true. But if I do this, the push has succeeded. And if we look at the table, then the apartment is still there, and it's marked as rented true, so the conflict has been resolved. Again, the reason it doesn't show up here is that it's already rented. Why the Redmond apartment is still there evades me for now, but it's probably cached in the database locally and doesn't go away for some reason. So let's take a look at how you build this offline sync support. Which is really pretty nice. And in this app, I make it explicit whenever you push and pull, but you could make it implicit and do this in the background somehow. So, the first thing we need is add to our data model a version property. And we need this on the client side. The client side has to ask for the version explicitly. And it's marked with a special attribute provided by mobile services called version. This is how the framework knows this should be used for versioning and for conflict detection. Now, it doesn't mean you have to change the table because this is already there. This version column is already there. Just add this to your client so that the client can see the version. Once you have that, you have to initialize a sync store, an offline database to which you will sync your data, the offline store. And so, well, there's a bunch of code here, basically, but one thing to note is that the mobile service SQLite store is the abstraction that wraps a SQLite database. It's just a plain file, and the store is pluggable. So for now, we only have this one implementation, which uses SQLite. But it's, in fact, behind an interface. So you could implement your own store, which saves the data to a file, or to the registry, or I don't know where. So essentially, you could imagine in the future, multiple offline storage options. And then you define the tables for which you want to sync, and you initialize this thing. That's all initialization. And then we have push and pull, which are the really important operations. So for pull, you say, here's a table. I want to pull from that table to my offline storage. This is on a table basis. So you ask the server for all the contents of that table. You cache that offline. And then you can do operations on that table, and they will be the results will be retrieved from your local offline store. When you push on a sync context that's global to all your tables. So you can't say, I only want to push my updates to this particular table. And the reason for this is that there might be dependencies. For instance, maybe I have a user object and an apartment object, and I'm inserting a user and then an apartment owned by that user. So there's a dependency there, and the framework takes the stance of issuing all the push operations at once. So you can't pick the table which you want to sync. Yes?
Don't you have the same problem pulling?
No. Pulling, you can cache whatever you want. What you don't have cached, you will have to access from the server.
So the local database is
It can be relational, but it's not necessarily relational.
It doesn't enforce the
relation. No, it doesn't enforce the relation. You can sync only one table. Yeah. Okay, so we have push and pull, and pull, and one thing hidden here, which was on the previous slide, is a sync handler, which determines what to do when there is a conflict, when an operation fails because a conflict was detected because the version doesn't match. So I'm going to show you all these moving pieces in Visual Studio. So here's the code for that app. Rent-a-home Windows 8. And here's mainpage.xaml, actually first app.xaml. So at some point over here, no, it's actually in main page, sorry. So somewhere over here, this is the code that initializes that sync context with a mobile services SQLite store. And this is my merge handler, prompting sync handler. This is a class I've written. So let's take a look at that sync handler, which wasn't on the slides. So I navigate to that. This is a class that implements the iMobile Service Sync Handler interface, which has just this one important method, execute table operation async. It tries to perform an operation on the server table, and then if something goes wrong, I get a chance to remediate. So essentially what I do here, and this is pretty boilerplate code, which I've copied off the internet, I call operation execute async, which executes the operation in the cloud, but it can fail with a very specific exception, mobile service precondition failed exception. And this means that we've tried to do something, we tried to make an update, an insert, and the version didn't match, so we have a conflict. Now, if that happens, then I just show a dialogue. This is the very dialogue you have seen, synchronization conflict between local and server version. I have the local version from that operation, and I have the server version from the exception. So when the exception is thrown, it also gives me the server item with which I had a conflict. And this is how I can display the various data to the user and ask which version they would like to keep. And so how do we actually do this? Well, if the user picks keep server version, there's essentially nothing to do. We just have to update the offline local store, but we don't make any changes to the server. And so we simply return the server version. The user can also pick, can also choose to abort the push operation completely. And this just sort of defers the decision to the next time. So it's still in my offline store. It still doesn't match the server version, but we've just aborted this operation. The interesting thing is keep local version. So if I want to force the server to accept my local version, essentially what I do is update the thing that I'm trying to insert, update its version property to the version property on the server item. Let me break this down into two lines. So I'm just updating the local version inside that operation to the version of the server item, and then I attempt the operation again. So this is basically saying I know that there's a version mismatch, so here's an item which has the right version. Go ahead and do this operation on the server. This will change the version on the server, but the important part is that the version I have locally is now faked to be the most recent version. There are other approaches to this as well, but this is a sort of a very standard one. And this is, of course, in case you want to involve the user in this decision. In many cases, you'd probably just grab the server version and that's all. You don't really want to handle, you don't want to let the user pick what to do. So this is the sync handler part. Other than that, there isn't anything specially interesting in here. So the one thing that might be interesting is that I have this toggle button. So I can work offline or I cannot work offline. And this is essentially me switching an object. So when you switch from offline sync to online sync, I switch the table. I use a different table when you change the setting. Again, you can see this whole thing in the sample code that I'll give you. And again, in your own mobile app, it might make sense to have an explicit offline mode, which the user can opt into, or you just might pick one of the options. On a phone, for instance, you probably will always, or at least most of the time, have internet connectivity. On a Windows Store application, you might actually need the offline support. So this is super dynamic. Right. So the last thing I haven't shown you, and it's really super cool, so I want to show you an example of that, is debugging the service in the cloud. And again, it's cool because it's integrated in Visual Studio. So basically, suppose I want to see exactly what happens when the user, let's say, deletes an apartment. I want to verify that only the user which created the apartment is allowed to delete it. So I've just gone ahead and placed a breakpoint over there. And now I can go to Server Explorer, to this Windows Azure section, pick my service, and just say Attach Debugger. Let's see what happens. Retrieving remote debugger credentials. And wow, it was actually pretty quick. Usually isn't so fast. It's loading the landing page for some reason, but it doesn't really matter. The important part is that the debugger was launched. If you look at the debugging output, we've already attached to the server. Ignore the script stuff. And now, if I go back to the app and try to... let's add an apartment first. There it is. And now let's delete it. Then you can see that I hit the breakpoint. And this is pretty crazy because we're now debugging a service running in Windows Azure. And this is just leveraging the remote debugging support, which we had in Visual Studio like for 10 years or more. There are a couple of adjustments they had to make because, you know, remote debugging over the internet is a pretty dangerous thing to do. So they had to do some port adjustments so it would work with the non-standard ports. They had to somehow tunnel in the credentials because there are credentials involved. Not anyone can just start debugging my mobile services now. But then I have the full remote debugging experience. For instance, I can hover over the variable and see the variable. I can step through this code. It is, of course, slower than the local version, but essentially I can step through the code, I can look at the apartment object, see the user ID, and then maybe in the watch window I want to say service user user dot ID. That should be user with a capital U. Right, so we can see this value and compare it with apartment.userID and verify that they are indeed a match and so on and so forth. So now I'm just blabbing on and on, but it's really very cool that you can do this. And the thing is, it's not unique to mobile services, actually. You can also remote debug your websites when they're running on Windows Azure. You can remote debug your cloud services, and you can now even remote debug stuff that you have running on a virtual machine. So you could have a Windows Server virtual machine in Azure, you can run .NET applications on top of it, and you can remote debug them from your Visual Studio. And the integrated support for just right-clicking stuff and saying debug this is part of the Visual Studio Update 2 release candidate, which was announced at Build. But it's in pretty decent shape, as you can see, except for this SQL Azure management glitch, which I'm not really sure why we're still getting. But anyway, it does work pretty decently. So we've got 6 minutes and 53 seconds, which would be a good point to let you ask some questions, which I'm sure you have. I'm just putting this slide over here with my blog and Twitter account. I will be posting all of this code to Twitter and to my blog. You'll also have the video recording to review later. There's a bunch of decent materials on the offline support and the .NET backend. The official documentation at this point is sort of flaky. I mean, there are some tutorials, some things are missing. It's in preview again, but I expect in a couple of months this thing will mature to release to general availability. Azure has a pretty quick release cadence, in case you haven't noticed. So let's go ahead and switch to questions. Questions, yes, sir.
How does it handle changes in your entities?
How does it what? You mean in the schema?
Yeah.
You're right. So the question is, how do you handle changes in your schema? So this at least the thing we have been working with is based on Entity Framework, right, with SQL Server. So you can use Entity Framework migrations. Yeah. Just like you use migrations, basically. There are some quirks to that, but basically you can use migrations, and there's a code sample that shows you how. So this is also quite nice. Yeah?
Oh, firstly, thanks for a very engaging presentation.
I'm glad you haven't fallen asleep. Yes.
Would it make any sense to actually deploy it on a local server, or is it only available in an Azure environment?
Right. So the question is if you can keep that local deployment forever in production. I'm not sure what the support story around this would be, so it's probably not supported. But in fact, you can get it working. I mean, it is a web application, so you can definitely get that working. The push stuff will work, but it will use the notification hub, which is hosted in Azure. The authentication stuff will require a callback URL that you'll have to implement. Or you could use the one in Azure and then somehow tunnel that to yours. Not trivial. And the data support is definitely easy, but then, I mean, if you just want to store stuff in a database, you don't need mobile services with web API. So at this point, I don't think it's really designed to run in production locally. And, well, obviously Microsoft have an incentive for selling the service here. So.
Well, yeah, but it does really provide, at least to me, some really powerful, simple abstractions to stuff you otherwise have to implement yourself.
Yeah, I agree that it does provide a nice abstraction, but then, I mean, in ASP.NET MVC and Web API, you have scaffolding support. You can write this class and generate a controller with all the methods like from Visual Studio. So again, if you only are after the data stuff, it doesn't give you a lot. It does give you a nice starter project template. But the real powerful stuff is push, is authentication, integrating the different mobile stuff together, and that's it will be quite difficult to get it working locally. Yes? Right. How does it scale? So I haven't shown you the scaling experience at all, and I also haven't talked about pricing at all, and we have like 3 minutes. So the general idea is that under your mobile service, there is this scale section where you pick a tier, free, basic, or standard. If you do pick a tier, then you specify how many units you want, and units are the pricing unit here. And you also can specify an auto-scaling schedule, which also was announced a few months ago for different Azure services, and it also includes mobile services now. So essentially what this means is that you can scale to a different number of units based, for instance, on the time of day or something. Like during weekends, you need fewer units. Now, a unit gives you a sort of a guarantee for a certain number of operations per month, certain number of pushes per month. There's some pricing behind this. But if you drag this to the maximum, you can scale to millions of users, to thousands of concurrent operations. There will be multiple virtual machines provisioned for you. It's there. Yeah, auto-scaling is exactly this. I mean, you can provide a schedule, right? I haven't used this actually, but different scale settings for weekdays and weekends.
It's getting really busy on your...
Oh, yeah, sure. There's also this option here. This is the only thing available right now, but you can scale by API calls. So when you get X API calls per period of time, then it will spin up more instances. Yeah. 1 minute to go. Yes. Right. So the thing I've shown you here, which calls pull async on the table object, this will pull whatever the server returns, which is by default the whole table. The server can filter if necessary, but you can also use another version of pull async, which takes a query. And so you can only pull items that are interesting for you, or maybe the top 100 items or something. But still, even if you don't do this on the client, the server can do the filtering. For instance, I could return only apartments in Israel. 40 seconds. Yes. Right, so why not use cloud services? Well, with cloud services, you don't get, well, I'd say everything. you don't have this you don't have the storage abstraction in such an easy form. You don't have push integration. You don't have authentication integrated. You don't have notification hub integration. I mean, you could definitely host a web API app or website or web service and cloud services, even in the websites, in Azure websites. Mobile services has this specific orientation toward mobile apps, stuff that mobile apps need, and it has a pretty compelling story there, I think. Yes?
Does it have something like migrations?
So I think the gentleman right in front of you has asked, yes, it has support for anti-framework migrations. Okay, well, time's up, the screen says. So thank you very much for coming. Enjoy the rest of the conference.